The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
If you're listening to this program over the last couple of weeks, you might have heard me mention on a couple of occasions a book called How Big Things Get Done. It's an analysis of big capital works projects, what makes them succeed, what makes them fail, and really worrying stats on how many of them fail miserably. We're now staring into our biggest capital works project, I think, in the nation's history, which is Metrolink, which got the go-ahead this week. The author of that book is a professor who spends his time analysing big capital works projects across the world. He's professor at Oxford and Copenhagen. His name is Professor Bent Fjubjar, and he's with us now. Bent, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
It is a great pleasure. Before we get to the challenges that face us in Ireland specifically, you have some numbers in the book on how challenging and how unsuccessful major public works projects are. And I was taken by one where you had a graph where you said if you look at benefits intended for the project, timeline that it's meant to meet, and cost that it's meant to meet, the percentage of projects around the world that actually deliver on all three, if I remember rightly, you said it was less than 1%.
Yes, 0.5%. So that is one project out of 200 delivers on all three. That's the odds you're up against when you're building something like a metro.
Why? Why are the odds so bad?
We as a species are simply not very good at doing big projects. We seem to be making the same mistakes over and over, not preparing the projects properly, hiring people who don't really have the relevant or enough experience to deliver the projects and so on.
Now, we have a tendency, I think, in Ireland to believe that the Irish are uniquely bad at this. Because if you look at, for instance, the children's hospital that has been delivered, we regularly say most expensive hospital on the entire planet. Why are we unable to do big capital work stuff? Are we uniquely bad or is it universal?
You have some pretty bad projects in Ireland, but so do everybody else. So you are not uniquely bad. You're just bad, you know, just as bad as everybody else. And we've studied more than 125 countries by now, and we have good data, the best data set that exists. And we have not been able to identify one country or one geography that is consistently good at this. So we can't point to a place and say, like, just do like they do in X country and you'll be okay. It does not exist.
Now, I would have thought maybe it's applying racial stereotypes, but I would have thought the Danes, the Germans, they have a reputation for being able to crank out pretty good projects, no?
No, you're absolutely wrong. The Germans are actually in deep crisis these years because they used to think that they were good at big projects and good at running auto manufacturing and so on, and they realized that, you know, it's a proud engineering nation, and they realize that that is not the case anymore, that they have the same problems as everybody else. If I had to point to, you know, there are a few examples of some project types that have done well. The U.S. used to be good at hydroelectric dams, but that's a long time ago when they built the Hoover Dam and a lot of similar dams. The Netherlands are better than average at rail, actually. So you might want to look to the Netherlands in order to learn how to do rail well in Dublin.
But I'm intrigued by one of the things that you say in the book is that the skills are not necessarily transferable. I think you cited Denmark as an example of where the fact that you have a long history of large construction doing things like bridges does not necessarily tee you up well to make tunnels.
No, that's a very important point because people sometimes think, you know, we just hire somebody who's used to doing bridges. Or one case I was involved in Canada, they were building a huge dam that actually ended up threatening the whole finances of a whole province in Canada. And they couldn't find an experienced dams builder. So they figured, you know, how hard can it be? Let's get somebody from oil and gas. So they got somebody from oil and gas and charged them with building this huge multi-billion dollar hydroelectric dam. And they failed, of course, because they didn't have the relevant domain experience. Domain experience is crucial. So you need somebody with a long experience and a good track record of actually having delivered projects successfully for the kind of project that you are now planning and delivering.
Now, does that need to be at every level of the project? Because you mentioned the Hoover Dam. The Hoover Dam was preceded by Ardna Crusher in Ireland. Ardna Crusher was built by Siemens in from Germany. But a large amount of the workforce on that was previously inexperienced local indigenous labor who did quite a good job by all accounts. So is it just the top management has to have the experience?
I'm talking about the leadership now, the people who are in charge of the project. So that would be like the group at the top. And of course, if you're doing construction, there will be some jobs in construction that you can use construction workers that haven't worked on a dam before, because it's about pouring concrete or, using steel in the construction, whatever, moving earth and so on. So that's pretty much transferable. But the actual skills of designing the project and also planning the process for how to deliver it and so on is something that you need people who have domain experience for.
You cite one example in the book that I was fascinated by of how badly things can go. The high-speed rail connection to nowhere in California. Maybe you might tell us a bit about that project, because as an exemplar of how big a disaster can be, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's a project that was planned to cost $33 billion and be completed in about 10 years. And now it's more than 10 years later, and the budget is now $100 million, and it's not completed. And actually, California has the legislature there has made a decision to not complete the project in total. They're just building the middle stretch, which is between Merced and Bakersfield in the valley in California. And that means that you are getting a high speed rail line between two cities that very few people know, and that's not a good idea. You won't have the patronage, the passengers on the train that you need in order to make it financially viable. So that's a real disaster.
And why did that come to pass? Did it become an orphan project that nobody wanted? How did it end up being such an expensive mess?
Many reasons, but one main reason is that not all stakeholders had been taken into account. That's one part of preparing a project properly, is to actually identify all stakeholders and take them into account and make sure that they're on board with the project. So obviously, when you build a rail line that is as long as between Los Angeles and San Francisco, you're going to affect a lot of stakeholders, including the people who own the land that you're going to build the rail line on. They had huge problems actually getting the land for the rail line, and it took much longer and it became much more expensive, and they ran out of money, you know, before they had done it. So this is the main explanation, but also bad management and hiring people who didn't have the relevant experience and so on.
We're getting questions about whether or not about other countries that are good at building stuff. What about the Japanese for delivering projects? The lean process came from Japan, specifically Toyota. And of course, they have the Shingo and the Shingo process. And they have the Shinkansen light rails or high speed rail system, which is the envy of the world. Are they not the paragons of virtue when it comes to construction?
No, it's true that the high-speed rail lines work very well once they have been completed, but the Japanese have cost overruns on those like others do. And the Japanese have been a bit in the same situation that Germany is now, that they are a very proud engineering nation. And they realized that that's not enough, you know, to make it as a nation and as an economy in the global economy. If you really want to look to a country, it's China you want to look at these days. China is the nation that is building the most mega projects, and they are doing it in a way that is very, consistent, doing it over and over. So they are really learning the ropes of how to do this by doing one after another repeatedly. So their high-speed rail system, you know, is bigger, much bigger than all other high-speed rail systems combined in the rest of the world. So they have experience in this now. It's built in a fairly short period of time. They do the same with all sorts of other things, you know, like they have conquered the world regarding wind power, regarding solar power, regarding batteries, regarding EVs, electric vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. And there's going to be more over the next 5-10 years. You will see more examples like that where they just outcompete any other nations. So if you want to look to a nation that is successful at this, it would be China at the moment, because of the scale of what they're doing and the intensity and the many engineers that are working on this. But even in China, and we've succeeded in getting some data from China, which is hard actually, they also have cost overruns. Not so much delays. They are better at doing things quickly, but that's because they don't have the same laws that we do regarding safety, environment, and so on, and property rights. So that's not something we want to emulate, you know, but we still could learn things from China regarding the technical aspects of how to design a project, how to divide it into stages and how to get it done.
Did you look at all at the Children's Hospital specifically in Ireland? Have you come across that?
Yeah, I've come across it, but I haven't done research into it. But I've followed it in the news, and it's a pretty bad case, you know. But we can find much worse around the world.
The one that really struck me, and it's interesting because the affection and relevance of a project is not necessarily linked to how efficiently it's delivered. The Sydney Opera House was a disaster.
Yeah, that's one of the largest cost overruns in our database. I think the largest is 1,900%, and the Sydney Opera House is 1,400% cost overrun. And a 10-year delay, you know, in delivering. It took 10 years longer than they planned for. And for me, the biggest cost of that was that it destroyed the career of the architect. You can't mention another major building that the architect of the Sydney Opera House did, and it's a magnificent building. I mean, if you've been there, you know what I mean. It's a building that really affects you. It's uplifting, amazing architecture. So it's great it's there. But unfortunately, we could have had a whole set of buildings like that by that architect, like most other architects of that fame and class get to do, but this architect didn't. That's the biggest cost of the Sydney Opera House.
And am I right in saying he never actually saw the finished product?
Yes, that's correct. He never went back. He didn't want to.
Because he was so embarrassed about the delivery overruns and the expense.
No. He was so traumatized. He wasn't embarrassed. It wasn't his fault. It was the New South Wales government, you know, which was pretty backward in those days. And you take this kind of, you know, like cutting edge, modern, young, advanced architect from Scandinavia, and you put him in Australia, which didn't have anything like this. They didn't have cultural buildings. It was a very innovative idea, a lot of foresight from the people who wanted the Sydney Opera House, but they didn't have the backing of their stakeholders. So there was a lot of resistance and a lot of problems in delivering.
What then if, as I say, Metrolink now has the go-ahead and it will be, I was going to say the largest capital works project after Ordnance-Grosha. I think it's going to be a larger capital works project even than Ordnance-Grosha. The sort of the five or six critical things, if you were advising us as a nation, what would you tell us to make sure that we get this right?
So we have one slogan in the book, which is think slow, act fast. So I'm going to tell the people responsible in Ireland that you need to think slow and you need to act fast. And if you think quickly, if you just think it's about let's start digging. This is an attitude you find often, and just get the project going. All the things that you haven't thought through are going to come back and bite you later and become much more expensive than you had taken the time and the money up front to prepare the project well. So that's number one, preparation, that you really need good preparation for the project. The second thing is that you need an excellent project team headed by what we call a master builder. So somebody who really has the track record and the experience of doing this type of project. So you need somebody who has built several metros before and done it successfully. That's very easy to check, you know. Either somebody has done it or they don't. If you hire somebody who hasn't, you're going to be in for trouble because they're going to cut their teeth and learn their lessons on your project for your money. You don't want that. You want that experienced person with a team that is also experienced. The third thing is you want an incentive structure around the project where if the people you hire to deliver the project deliver successfully, they get rewarded. So they make money or make extra money if they do what they're supposed to do, which is deliver successfully, and they get punished if they don't. So if they don't deliver to the standards that have been agreed in the contracts and so on, they get to pay fees for that. And if you want to see specifically how to set up that's also in the book. There's a whole chapter about London Heathrow Terminal 5, which is a really good example of how to deliver a project with the right incentives that I'm talking about now. So instead of six things, I'm going to mention just these three. Those are the most important.
Ben, thank you very much for your time this morning. That is Bent Flyberg, who is professor at Oxford and at Copenhagen, and of course the author of How Big Things Get Done. A text saying, great to hear Bent on with Anton. Love that book. We use it as a key reference in our business. It's a must have for all with an interest in projects. Another good morning. The Irish aren't bad at building tunnels all over the world. My father, Patrick Keogh, was the foreman on the Victoria Line in London, worked alongside a lot of the forgotten Irish in 1960. Another saying, we now have a bike lane to nowhere on the road outside Moon in Kildare. It starts nowhere, it goes nowhere, and you have to get off the bike to get on and off it. Go figure. Crazy.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.